The men behind the UK-based electronica soul outfit Zero Seven. Producers Henry Binns and Sam Hardiker next on The Culture Catch. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Absolute Poker. You think you're good enough to play? Check out Absolute Poker.
Check one, check.
Okay. Joining me today on The Culture Catch, the men from Zero Seven, Henry and Sam. Welcome, men.
Hello.
Welcome, men.
You got to sit in tight. I know it's nothing personal. I understand the name Zero Seven came from a bar in Honduras.
Where did you hear that?
I read that somewhere.
That's ridiculous. Nobody would name a band after a bar in Honduras.
That's what I thought as well, but it was on the All Music Guide. You know the All Music Guide.
Yeah, they lie.
They lied. Fucking.
So
I hate it when they do.
Lying people out there.
Now, how did you come up with the new in the 07?
It just dropped out of the sky. I mean, literally, we had half an hour to come up with a name one day, and that one just landed there.
Well, it would make sense with binary code. Zeros and ones. We're dealing with zeros and sevens.
Yeah. No, it's not binary. It was completely random. And I think initially we imagined it would just be a name for this one track that we had done, which was a remix of a Radiohead track. And we just got stuck with it.
Well, I was going to ask you, was that kind of the defining moment for your young career, was mixing that Radiohead track? They had so much.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely, you know, it was like a
foot in the door.
Yeah, suddenly we had an opportunity to actually get inside this world that we've been trying to just to get some work, you know, get someone to give us a break doing something, and we luckily got that, and suddenly we had, you know, a little bit more chance of getting other things going, and it sort of rolled on from there.
And the thing was really a do-it-yourself bedroom setup like a lot of us start out with, Pro Tools and the normal kind of computer rig.
I mean, I don't know if we were barely on Pro Tools then. We were like Atari.
Oh, yeah. You were Atari-based. Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Well, we were working at a studio in North London called Rack, and we'd stolen the monitor, the desk out of their mobile studio. And we sort of set up this studio, and you know, we only had a few. I mean, back in our day, the Atari and the S5000 or whatever, that was what we used. S950, thank you. That was all we had, you know, so we'd just be doing that, programming beats for people and stuff. So, and they just developed from there.
The Radiohead connection, though, was that through the label side, or did the band hear something? Did you guys have a connection?
The only connection we had is when they'd made the bends at the studio where we used to work.
Gotcha.
And we used to... Because we used to be sort of hanging around there, watching TV. Occasionally, we would be sitting on the couch with Ed or Johnny, or not so much Tom, because I don't know if he was watching that much TV. But so that was it. I mean, we just spoke a little bit, just, you know, watching football or whatever. So they were vaguely aware of our existence, and our friend who also worked there was on the session, and we just hassled him for weeks to let us hear something. And he gave us a cassette, actually, of the sort of work in progress, which was the OK Computer record. And we just sampled stuff from the cassette. I mean, from the actual...
From the cassette itself?
Yeah, from
the
mix. So we just... And then we just tried to EQ out the backing track and lifted some of the vocals. And that's kind of how it stayed on the final mix. You can hear bits of the original music that we couldn't quite get rid of.
Right. That's great. That's a great story. It also proves the perseverance if you really catch a vibe with something, you know, just kind of like the casualness of a chance encounter, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't going to wait around for them, you know, we had to do what we had to do.
Yeah, Right. And from there, how did you then pique the interest of the labels? Did you just keep doing these mixes and these, you know, kind of adding your... I almost aching it to like what Eno does to a track. You guys are really musicians as well, so you're adding elements or subtracting elements.
I think at the time we didn't really know what we wanted to do, but we just had a real hunger to be involved creatively in music, but we didn't have a kind of identity. You know, we didn't have a kind of idea of how to make our own music in a way. So our only in was to sort of be involved in other people's stuff, and that happened to be sort of in the role of kind of reinterpreting these tracks, remixing, whatever. And we just started doing that, and I think it was only through doing that that we got sort of the confidence or whatever to start making our own music. And then we released a thousand of these EPs, of a five-track EP of some stuff that would kind of evolved out of doing remixes.
But then it just started to steamroll for you guys, didn't it?
Well, we hadn't expected that particular EP to just, you know, to do as well as it. I mean, it's not like we released lots of them, but they went very quickly, and then people asking for more, and yeah, it snowballed from there.
Do you think also the timing, the DJ's position in that day, it's like, what was this, 97?
This is a bit later.
99?
Yeah.
Something like that. 99, okay. People were used to DJs doing mixes. People were hungry for a creative vibe as opposed to just a house mix or something that was so dance-driven. Mm. You guys were doing it with an ambient, with a chill thing. There was still the dance thing happening.
We didn't really know what we were doing.
Interesting.
Like, I mean, we didn't really know in terms of
style.
How it would be perceived. Yeah. I mean, we'd grown up listening to a lot of dance music, and were influenced by that in terms of how we had approached making music, but what actually came out wasn't dance music. And I don't know if either of us particularly thought about that at the time, but we didn't really know if it would be, you know, who it would appeal to, if anyone. And really, for me, my only hope was kind of that it would be sold in some of the record stores that I would go into, you know. That maybe some people who went to the same stores might get into it, you know.
That's always nice to actually make money on your art. What a clever concept.
Yes, nice work if you can get it.
We didn't make any money then. Mm. I mean, now since we sold our souls, we make a
lot of money. The crossroads, the devil, it's a sordid tale, I'm sure.
I can't even really comment on that last, you know.
What?
The man.
Well, you have to have the man, and then you hope to reach a point where you don't need the man.
Exactly.
I think everyone's using everyone else, right? Yeah. They're using you, you're using them. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that, but
why don't they leave us alone?
Do they still bother you about your creative process?
Yeah, I mean, you know, all the time. You know, they never stop. But, I mean, there's always a pull, isn't there? The age-old kind of artist record company tug of war.
Yeah, well, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't mentality. Yeah. Mm. You know, it's, and the labels obviously are in a very different position with the way the internet is developing so rapidly, and how we democratize information on the internet. Mm. The show, there are no gatekeepers. They can't tell you what to say or what not to say.
No, I mean, that one's been coming up the road from a long way off, and I think people have been, record companies especially, have been seeing these lights coming slowly towards them and thinking, what are we going to do when this gets here, and panicking. But it seems to be now sort of, it's kind of establishing itself a little bit more, I think, that, you know, they can't control every aspect of it, and that's sort of accepted. And, you know.
Yeah, and that's what we like on our lot. On our side, we love that because... You know, at the end of the day, people want this information. Mm-hmm. You know, this interview right here is going to be heard all over the globe by your fans everywhere. And maybe there's not a fan that knew you before this interview who may pick your music up after they hear the interview. Because once this gets delivered into iTunes, it's delivered into their mailboxes.
Yeah.
It's uploaded automatically. Mm. And it's just like getting a mail, you know, getting a magazine in a postbox. Mm. You open it up, you go, oh, here's a story with 07.
Yeah.
Cool. And you guys go, yeah, we've got live gigs, we've got this, we've got a new record. And
I mean, I find it, you know, it's liberating and it's slightly terrifying at the same time.
You have fans out there that will be stalking you via the internet.
I mean, the 79p thing worries me slightly, you know. I mean, the fact that people want hits real instantly. I'm not sure if they'll buy albums so much. I think people should still buy the whole album.
I agree with you there. And I think that the verdict's still out on that. Because, you know, we grew up in an age where going to the record store, we had vinyl. Wow, what an experience, you know. And you hold the vinyl, you smell the vinyl, you know, the whole thing, and the graphics of the vinyl. Mm. The internet, to an extent, does lose that experience. Mm. There's no question. But maybe as it develops, it becomes holographic. There are other elements, three-dimensional. You know, we see 07's image. Mm. They're playing live in your bedroom as you play the track or something.
Yeah, well, we're just sort of catching up with this whole concept, you know, of how much further it can go. And I guess we haven't really got any idea at the moment.
Yeah, nobody does. There are spaces, virtual spaces like Second Life, that are entire worlds that you create. You create your own being. You trade, you gamble. You can even have sex in this virtual world. And it's like the Matrix. And it's really terrifying. But, you know, as my wife said, you're going to spend the next 6 hours in this space. You know, you got shit to do in the house.
Exactly.
You know,
I'll have that too, Ned.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, you know, I only wanted to get my EP sold in the record store, you know, the record shop that I go to. And beyond that, the whole thing's a little bit overwhelming.
Now, yeah, it is. You know, what was the one track that really made Americans sit up and take notice of you on the label side and on your fan base side?
I suppose it's our so-called hit, which is, you know, laughable, but Destiny was, you know, a big song that kind of managed to cross over onto the radio, which surprised us, because we've never sat down and written, you know, a radio record, and I still don't really know what that is.
Well, I don't know if it did. I mean, I don't know how much impression it made in America, really.
Well, you moved units, so, you know, that's saying something.
Right.
So it had to make an impression, and unfortunately or fortunately, the radio is still part of that component.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how it works, and it seems very different in America.
Yeah, there's a lot of college stations. Yeah. There's a lot of hip underground stations.
So, yeah, we went to some stations that were...
Like KCRW in L.A.,
KCRW,
Nick Harcourt.
And a few other college stations that were great. And then we had a little peek into another world of kind of mainstream radio that was... entirely different kind of beast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that record was really interesting. You guys were working with some vocalists that were, you know, you guys have I think a real knack for finding interesting vocalists who on their own writer artists. Tell me about that experience. How does that work for you?
Well, I mean, we kind of, you know, like that, like the first record in a way, we sort of stumbled across a lot of things. And I think that Moses, I'd already know. I mean, I'd known him as a friend before we started on the album. And, you know, we just met friends of friends and just tried things out, and eventually we kind of ended up with this hodgepodge of a record that seemed to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, none of it was done through sort of professional channels, you know. It was all just people we met through friends.
How did the Sia connection come about? Because I think, I love her music.
Yeah, just like that. A guy that I knew... not very well, said, you know, he was helping out this girl he'd met who moved over from Australia, and she's had a great voice, and he gave me another cassette, actually, of some first stuff, and I was walking to the studio listening to it, and I thought, this is really different to most of the stuff that I've heard recently, and played it to Henry, and he liked it as well, and we just got in touch, and you know, we had some bits of music lying around. We played some stuff to her, and she kind of responded positively.
She's incredible. You know, she had a big breakthrough in the States, I don't know if you know, with her song Breathe Me on the show 6 Feet Under.
Yeah.
And it was I get goosebumps thinking about it. It was the last montage of the very last episode, and it was such a brilliant use of that track. Mm-hmm. That it was like, oh God, I hope it doesn't kill your career. It's so career defining in itself, you know.
Yeah, they can be a double edged sword, but that really works. I mean, especially when you get something that's really good quality like 6 Feet Under, that's great. I mean, it's really turned things around for her. Yeah,
yeah. But there again, the connection was through you guys, because I wonder if I have to think maybe the music supervisors heard her. Through the 07. Yeah, all right. I'm patting you on the back.
If in doubt, I'm sure it's through us. You know.
But you've got a new record coming out. Are some of the same friends from the last record on this new one as well?
Sia's involved, and a guy that we haven't worked with before called Jose Gonzalez, who's got a record that's been doing pretty well, which was the kind of the first time we'd ever approached someone kind of not through friends or whatever. And we just had this record, both of us, when we were touring our last album, and we both got really into it. And when we were sitting down writing some stuff this time, it just came up one day. I think somebody said, why don't we, you know, this could work. I think maybe this would be something interesting for this guy, Jose Gonzalez. And I mean, we didn't really know whether he would be interested in collaborating or not. And we managed to get in touch with him and played him some stuff, and he was really, really very cool about it, and really sort of interested in trying some different stuff. And luckily, it worked out.
Was there anyone that you wanted to work with, Henry? That perhaps, in hindsight, or maybe just a general question, is there an artist that you guys would say, man, we could add some of our 07?
I mean, for me, you know, I think. These collaborations can be slightly strange. I mean, there are people who obviously I adore in the music, but I'm quite happy with the way things are going. Yeah. You know? So not really. Yeah, it's not like a big hit list.
Yeah, it's not always a great idea. I mean, just because it's somebody that we. I mean, the thing with Jose was, and also we did a sort of version of one of his songs from his record, and it's difficult when you get sort of the stuff that you know already, and you really kind of love it, to then sort of rework it or whatever. And I think it's the same with people, you know, artists that you have a real sort of feeling for. Doesn't mean necessarily that you should collaborate.
That it would work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think both of us were quite, nervous about whether this was a good idea, the Jose Gonzalez thing. And I think really it was down to the fact that he responded so positively and was so cool about just coming out and hanging out with us in the studio and trying things, and that's kind of why it worked.
So you guys are really, the vibe I'm catching is it's really serendipitous for you guys. Just let it happen.
Yeah.
You're not going to push too hard in the middle.
No. Yeah.
If it comes in from the edge, that's cool.
It's random magic.
Yeah, random magic. There's a marketing buzzword, random magic from 07. Sorry, Sam. I'm not in the wrong game, man. Yeah, you're an ad man without even knowing it, man.
Yeah.
Speaking of ads, you guys had some advert luck, right? Has any of your stuff been dropped in ads?
Not really.
No.
I think people assume that we've had a lot. You know,
I'm assuming incorrectly.
Fat car ads.
Oh boy, wouldn't that be nice? Huh?
Well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I don't know. I think that we're quite lucky in a way that it hasn't come up, because I feel there would be some sort of dilemma there as to whether or not we want to sell cars. But then, obviously, I could do with, you know, a couple of $100,000 or whatever.
Or the barter of a couple of new cars.
Yeah, or a couple of
money and
cars.
Yeah. And, an Aston Martin or something.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
You know.
But actually, maybe it's quite fortunate that we haven't had to kind of go through that little dilemma.
Right.
You know, things are pretty good as they are, and I don't have a burning desire to sell stuff.
Cool, that's good. That's good. How, you know, I guess for the uninitiated who are listening, how would you describe how you approach music as opposed to a guitarist who might be writing a song? Is there any difference for you?
I play the piano, so, I mean, it's going to be very different, I suppose, in a way. But I think it starts off like anyone, you know, a couple of chords and a melody, or maybe sometimes even some words, although that's rarer. But, songwriting's pretty new to me and Sam. You know, we got into it in a different avenue.
And that's what I mean, because you're coming in from the DJ vibe.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sort of more, I guess, more from sort of being producers. I mean, I don't quite know what we are, really. I don't quite know where we exactly fit.
Sonic artists, maybe?
Yeah. I mean, all I know is we enjoy being in our kind of studio environment and going through this process of trying to make music. It's not quite defined, you know, it's not really defined in terms of exactly what we do or where, in a wider sense, it fits into what other people do. Mm. I've never been too sure about that. All I know is that, it gives me a buzz. doing
That's
it.
Great. Mm. That's great. You had a thought on that, Henry?
Well, only when I'm thinking about it, just on this album, there seems to be more kind of collaborations. And well, me and Sam have kind of written whole songs this time, which was different from where it was before. So in order to try and get the thing done, you know, I'd actually kind of la-la-la a melody, and then he'd written some words, and then we had a song, which was a new place to find ourselves in.
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be stimulating, so you're always creating, and it adds another component
And sort of expanding a bit, you know, on what we've done previously. So it does feel like you're sort of learning, trying out new stuff. And that's, I mean, for me, I'm, you know, I don't really think of myself as a musician, so...
If you'd like to see 07 live from the comfort of your own computer screen, you can do so this Saturday, June 3rd, 8 p.m. UK time, 3 o'clock New York time, and 12 noon LA San Francisco time. This Saturday, June 3rd, live from London, 07, brought to you by our friends at livegigsonline.com and us here at Culture Catch. Now back to the 07 interview.
Cleaning up the things he left behind. Have you moved to find some peace of mind? Are you aware of the mess you left behind? His skin grew thicker with each year. Looking back in the mirror, it all becomes clear. Views are not the same. I see sun, you see rain. Cleaning up the mess you left behind.
Anyway, we're back with Sam and Henry. Henry and Sam, 07. And 000. But we were talking about the live show and the experience. And every show, I guess every tour then is a new experience for you, man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel like we've got it anywhere near as sort of good as I'd like. So, yeah, each time I think we're sort of realising things more and more that we want to try and do and incorporate into the show. So hopefully this, yeah, I feel like this should be the best stuff we've done.
Yeah, Henry.
I agree. You know, we're just working hard at making the show good, and it's exciting. We've got a different lineup now. And it's just nice to hear it in a slightly different way every time.
Now, you guys got Jose Gonzalez involved, which is an incredible coup for you. You know, on a serious tip, how did that relate? You told him you were going to tour. You just called him direct and said, do you want to do some shows with us? Or did you have to go through the traditional channels of, like, my manager will call your manager and, you know?
There's always a bit of that, but we were sort of lucky because we'd made... You know, we'd kind of got in touch with him personally pretty early on, and so as soon as we'd done a bit of work and the stuff that we were coming up with we all liked, we suggested to him about coming on tour, which was obviously quite a while ago. The only thing that's difficult is that since then he's become such a well-known artist and has been touring fairly constantly, I think, through a lot of this year. So I just hope he's going to survive it. You know, he's got the amount of touring.
It's exhausting, isn't it? You guys know you've toured, and it's like, you know, and when you hit the States, the touring just becomes a whole other taxing issue over there.
But I think he must have been, when he comes to the States with us later on, that'll be his maybe third, fourth time this year. I mean, he's been there so much.
Yeah, might as well just take a place there.
But I mean, he's amazing, because every time I speak to him, he's really, you know, he's very calm with what's going on. There's always... You know, he's in the middle of this hectic schedule, and he always seems pretty calm and genuinely seems to be enjoying what's going on. I mean, why wouldn't he, I guess, but, you know. He's not kind of moaning about it.
Yeah. And Sia, you know, we talked about Sia earlier. I just love her. I'm sure her record finally got released this year, thanks to the track on 6 Feet Under. So her album has a little bit of a buzz, and that's got to help. And she's not bad to look at either.
Mm. Yeah, she's not quite as nice to look at as Jose, but she's not bad.
When does the U.S. leg of the tour begin?
Starts right at the end of August with we got a show with KCRW in L.A.
My man Nick Harcourt.
Yeah.
I did a show. Nick and I used to have a show when he was at DST in Woodstock, and I was the editor at Cream Magazine back then, and he'd call me up. What's happening in New York these days, Dusty? And I'd go, Ramones are playing or something. You know, it was like that interview outside I just did, just making shit up with Nick.
Nick's
great,
cool,
man.
He's a good, you know.
And Nick is now doing, as you know, he's doing, or maybe you don't know, he's the soundtrack supervisor for movies and TV and stuff. So maybe that's your, you know, you're in with some of these tracks. Maybe Nick slips you into something.
Yeah, get us in, Nick. Jeez.
Yeah, a hot movie, you know, an Oliver Stone flick or something. Who knows, you know.
I mean, you know, a DJ like Nick is important, you know, for bands like us, like Giles Peterson. You know, they're the kind of vehicle where people can actually hear our stuff. So
yeah. So that'll be, and then when do you head into the New York area?
I guess just sort of for the next. That's right at the end of August, so I suppose sometime in early September we should be coming to New
Migrating
York.
Migrating through. Yeah, it should be really, really interesting. Well, I wish you good luck with the record and with your dates over here
in
Europe.
Thank you.
And we'll look for you in the States. Thanks for being on the Culture Catch, the men from 07, Sam and Henry. Yeah. And we'll see you soon. Live gigs online. Our man Forbes Hamilton from Glasgow taking AOL down 1 centimeter at a time.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with 07. That was done live in London a couple of weeks ago at the hospital. That's Dave Stewart and Paul Allen's very groovy joint in Covent Gardens. And don't forget, you can check out 07 this Saturday, June 3rd, live, our satellite webcast feed from livegigsonline.com, Forbes Hamilton and the crew from Glasgow. They'll be on at about 8 o'clock UK time, 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and 12 noon Pacific Standard Time, 07 this Saturday, June 3rd. I'd like to thank today's sponsors, our friends at Absolute Poker. If you think you can take on the big boys, check out Absolute Poker. And our friends, WebHSP.com. For all of your web hosting needs, it's WebHSP. And, of course, Frank Collin and the crew at Final Draft. If you're thinking about writing a script, no better script soft writing program than Final Draft. FinalDraft.com. This is Dusty Wright for the Culture Catch. Stay tuned for many, many more cool video and audio podcasts, including Gore Vidal, Echo and the Bunnymen, Blue October, choreographer Mark Morris, actor Alec Baldwin, etc., etc., etc. Remember, we are 2 inches wide, but 2 miles deep. The Culture Catch. Influencing the influencers, one user at a time. This is Dusty Wright. I'm out of here.